Happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and we're taking a look at home renovation and repair issues today with Chad Spate, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison. It's a full-service residential remodeling company. They specialize in sustainable design and historic renovations. John Viner, a guest as well. John with GDS Associates of Madison. And, gosh, really pleased to have these guys back and certainly ready to take your questions about any renovation or repair issues you may have around your home. So give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. John, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Yeah, thank you, Larry. It's always a pleasure.
And Chad, great to see you again as well.
Thanks, Larry. Great to be here.
You know, we've had some tough economic times, but how's business going for you guys? Chad, what about you?
It's pretty good. The phone has been picking up in its frequency of rings here this spring, as usual. A lot of people looking to renovate their homes. The energy tax credits have captured a lot of people's attention, and they're looking to make improvements in their insulation and air sealing and in replacing old leaky windows. So that has helped spur on what would otherwise be just a typical spring.
Yeah, and I suppose that's made for a busy time for you then, John.
Well, actually, the energy auditing business and just insulating taken unto itself for somebody to insulate their home has usually takes a little bit of a dip at this time of year, so
it does,
we have slowed down as far as energy auditing is concerned, but other services that we do offer has been more energy program development, and obviously those are getting a little bit more and more aware on utilities and communities wanting to offer from energy conservation to renewable energy programs for those.
So you've got something going, haven't you, for electrically heated homes? In part of Wisconsin?
Yeah, in southwest part of Wisconsin. So if you do live in that corner of the state and you do have significantly heat with electricity, which a lot of people do, there are a little additional incentives for you. I've been managing and operating a program in that part of the state that offers a discounted, say it's about 60% off the cost of a normal energy audit. And also, state's focus on energy program has doubled a lot of the rewards for making improvements in that state. So certainly, I would be the contact if somebody feels they fit that need that they're or fit that requirement that they heat electrically. Give me a shout. They might be able to connect you with that program.
And so that's just, they could go online, I assume, to gdsassociates.com and catch you that way.
Well, let's just, either my email or a direct phone line that I could give you. And that phone line is 608, the area code, 354-0207.
354-0207.
Yep.
And while we're at it, Chad, you've got a website, Chad's Carpentry? Yes, chadscarpentry.com as well.
Right? Correct.
For people to go to. All right. Well, by the way, just on energy audit, is it still okay? Can a person still do an energy audit this time of year, even though it's not cold outside?
Yeah, absolutely. We're able to get to the bottom of the measures that are needed and help you prioritize regardless of the time of the year. At the infrared thermal imaging camera that we offer sometimes gives us not a crisp, clear image on these days, but even in summertime when the attics are hot, the camera still becomes a very valuable tool. We have a temperature difference there that allows us to still utilize that tool and find out the needs.
All right. Well, lots of callers online. Let's go to Betty in Melrose first. Hi, Betty. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. I have a 10-year-old propane-fueled gas water heater, and it is making a lot of clunking noises as it refills, like there's a marble or a mineral or something in there. I'm just wondering if this is a sign that it's going or if there's a problem with it.
Well, we've got some guys here who aren't plumbers, but they do some work. What do you think?
Well, do you have a water softener?
No, I don't.
Okay. That could be part of it. I mean, there could be mineral deposits in there, and without soft water going to the water heater, it's going to you know, develop those deposits a lot faster. And it could be something deposited and then broke away, and that's sloshing around in there. It might be worth having a plumber take a look at it.
So, Betty, is this something that's always taken place or a new occurrence?
Oh, it's probably been in the last year.
In the last year or so. So maybe flushing the water heater might be an option off that drain valve in the bottom. Usually that's a regular maintenance item that's suggested anyway to do. And if there's a lot of mineral deposits at the bottom, that could be affecting it. And flushing those out is an option. I'm sure a plumber or a handyman could do that for you.
Sure.
Okay.
Good luck. Thanks, Betty. And Bernie in Manitowoc, on to you now. Hi, Bernie.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I'm working on an old Queen Anne house, and it's a rather large renovation project, and of course I'm doing it all myself. The house had some serious settling problems when I got it, and I've succeeded in getting the floors leveled back up again with a lot of jacking process. I won't go into exactly what it was, but there is a beam that goes transversely across the house. It's a big 8x10, probably oak beam, and that was only supported in one place in the middle. And even though I've managed to get it up fairly level in the place where the old post was, the floor or the beam tends to still be kind of hogged in that one particular place, and it doesn't seem to want to lay down to go back to its original position. Now, it's probably not a big problem because it isn't real bad. I no longer have a support in that place. I have that have it in the drooped areas of the beam. We put in some new footings there, but my issue right now is that position is actually going right through the middle of a bathroom that I'd like to put a ceramic tile floor in. And I'm just worried that if I put a floor in that's that rigid, if this does return to its original shape over time, that maybe the floor might experience some cracking.
Yeah.
It's also been suggested to me that in after putting the cement board down, maybe what I should do is use glue instead of thinset to set the tiles. I'm just wondering if you have any
thoughts on that. Sure.
Yeah, well, there are a couple of things, Bernie. I mean, one, you have to be really careful when you're jacking an old house and moving it around. And, of course, it sounds like you've already done that. But for the listeners out there, I just want to say that, you know, the house will probably continue to move. And as it has moved over the 80 or 100 years that your house has been standing there, it's really important if you are going to add new post and load points that you have proper footings under those, because if you're just jacking down to the cement slab on your floor, then you're really begging for a lot of movement and settling and cracking of your floor. And
no, we did that. We put we put two new rather large reinforced cement pads under the other locations. Actually, though, I'm thinking of going back to one support, but you know, putting possibly a steel beam under the
So I mean, that's good, and you know, if you have some confidence that the new load points are properly supported, and you've done everything you can to stiffen the floor system through that bathroom area. And often we find when we remodel an old bathroom that all the floor joists are cut up and there really isn't a whole lot of structural integrity left. And so you've got an opportunity to really stiffen that floor prior to putting your new subfloor and cement board down. And then I would recommend that you use some of the products out there that essentially allow the tile to float somewhat independent of the cement board. I don't know the trade names for those products, but the couple of tile installers that we work with use these products. Essentially, it's a rubber membrane that it floats over top of the floor. And so if you do have some cracking or settling in the subfloor, the tile will have an opportunity to float ever so slightly independent of that. And hopefully that will help address any remaining settling that you encounter.
Okay. All right. Good luck. Thanks, Bernie, for calling. Appreciate it. Jeff in Eau Claire, we're on to you now. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Let's see if I can explain what I have going on here. I have what could be described as a three seasons room or a screened-in patio.
Sure.
And it's not heated. It's adjacent to the kitchen and the garage. And I'd like to make it a more usable space. And I had a contractor come out here, and my idea was to put storm windows in. And when he came out here, he gave me some ideas as to other things I could do with that and some questions related to that. He suggested it's possible to take out the wall that's connecting it with the kitchen.
Okay.
And expanding that and then raising putting in a floor because it's lower and it's concrete, so raising the floor so it's level with the kitchen, and then putting insulated windows in there instead. And then my concern was we had a bunch of insulation work done and a new furnace put in, and I wondered if I have lots of questions related to if the furnace could handle that extra space in there, any types of caveats we should look at.
How big is the space, by the way?
Well, I'm not really good at that. I mean, I would describe it as just a bedroom size, like a master bedroom size room.
Like a 12 by 15 or something like that, maybe?
Sounds appropriate, yeah.
Well, you know, chances are you're going to be able to incorporate that space into your heated home without a problem for your furnace handling it. But the caveat here is that it has to be very well insulated and air sealed. And so that slab that is down on the floor right now is very likely to be an uninsulated slab. And so it's going to be important that the new floor create a thermal break and provide good insulation relative to that uninsulated slab, which would otherwise be a heat sink if it were part of your heated home. And then, of course, how the walls and the ceiling above are detailed will determine whether or not that room actually adds to the comfort of your home or detracts from it. You know, it would be possible to definitely add a lot of heat load to your home, or, you know, add a lot of problems and comfort issues by not properly integrating that space into the home.
So if we have windows on all sides, even in the summertime, depending on the direction and the sun, the cooling load also is an issue, something that should be looked at. So their heating contractors certainly can provide load calculations for you to appropriately size that the load of adding that new addition, and then assess the duct system as well as the furnace size. So that's a can be a very valuable step if there's questions there, especially if we're adding a room that's a decent size with all glass.
If I did decide to go just with the storm windows, is there something I should look at?
Either way, if you're going to try to live that in that space full-time, make it a full-time living area, as Chad said, insulating that concrete slab is number one, and we do something a little bit better than adding fiberglass in between floor joists where you've propped up the floor. And we look at ways to get the duct system across that room out towards those windows. Too often, we run the duct system just through the rim joist and stub it into that three-season porch, and we get poor distribution in that room.
So just to be clear, you're suggesting that I would consider insulation issues even if I do not heat that space.
I guess I'm under the assumption you want to spend more time out there and be comfortable.
Well, you know how it is. Right now, it's just big screens, and so if I want to go out there and it's stormy and rainy, I can't enjoy any time out there, even if the temperature's right.
Okay, well, then depends your personal preference on your use patterns, right? Certainly storms are going to block the brunt of the storm, and you're going to be able to watch those dark clouds go by, and I think that'd be enjoyable, right? But But
if you want to watch the snowstorms in the winter, yeah. Then you're going to have more insulation.
So for that use, and you're not worried about heating that space, and then spend time out there, put storms up. If we want to recreate out there and spend time, then we've got a whole new ball game to consider.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Chad Spate and John Viner, our guest today. Chad, owner of Chad's Carpentry of Madison. John Viner of GDS Associates of Madison. Our guests here, Jim Packard, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Having some fun today talking home renovation and repair issues, and looking forward to tomorrow as well. I'll be taking off this afternoon and driving to Bayfield, Wisconsin, northern part of the state, for Bayfield and Bloom at the Bayfield Pavilion. I'll be up there with Jason Fishbach and Don Kissinger and Art Odie and a whole lot of people who come every year to the Bayfield Pavilion. We're kicking off Bayfield and Bloom. So I'll be broadcasting from there tomorrow starting at 11. And if you're in the area, why, you know, I hope to see you there. Hope to see you there. And if you're coming by, come by early and we'll have a chance to visit maybe. That's tomorrow, Bayfield and Bloom. Ruth and Madison with us right now, though, and let's go to Ruth. Hi, Ruth.
Hi, thanks for this program. My question ultimately ends up with the annual mouse invasion, okay? So I'll tell you, I've got a 50-year-old house. It's a little bungalow, sits on a crawl space, and it was not built by a professional contractor. One of the neighbors built four houses here and back when it was the town of Madison. And the houses are grandfathered into the city now with all manner of code violations. But the house sits on a foundation of like cement blocks, and I think they're only about four high, or four deep, I should say. I've gone around the house on the outside, and even with a mirror, you know, where the sill, where the house sits on the foundation, and I've plugged every single hole. I've gone around under the shingles, you know, and found holes where the mice have come up in the downspouts and come in under the shingles of the roof. I've gone everywhere that I can possibly find on the outside of the house, including the closet and the carport, and sealed every single spot that they can get in. However, chipmunks have made their little holes right around the corner, one corner of my house here, and I know that they can go 6 feet deep and 14 feet long, and if my foundation is only four cement blocks deep, it's not any 6 feet. So I think the chipmunks have undermined under one corner of the house, and I've actually, when I've crawled on my belly up to the sill where the house sits on the foundation, I have found soil, you know, where something probably has brought it in. And I've blocked that off by putting tiles with, you know, like extra wall tile, you know, a 4x6 with bricks on top. But the cement blocks sit with the holes coming up, you know, and I think that there's places where they all line up just right that where the chipmunks have undermined, you know, and created these. The chipmunks don't come into the crawl space, but when they're awake, I think they keep the mice out of their holes. But when they're hibernating, I think the mice, being little thieves and invaders, go down the chipmunk holes and come up in my crawl space. So what I'm wondering is, can I put like a cement cap, or would that be a bad idea? Does something need to breathe, you know, or something? Or could I just go and put some hardware cloth down like a support and then smear concrete to cap that off? Because I have no idea how many tunnels and other places where the chipmunks may have undermined. But that's about the only thing I haven't done to seal my house.
Well, you've got a challenging problem there, Ruth. But I'm not sure that you're going to be able to do many things that are really effective, if I'm understanding the situation. I mean, one thing you might consider doing, though it would probably need to be professionally done, is to have an insulation contractor come and look at the possibility of being able to blow in a urethane foam in the sill of the house down in the perimeter. And that will do a couple of things. It will close up that hole in the cinder block, the top of the cinder block wall, and it will provide an increase in comfort and insulation for the perimeter of the home. Additionally, you might consider insulating the interior of that entire wall in the crawl space. Another issue that you might want to be concerned about, other than the pests, would be the potential for radon to rise up from the soil in that crawl space. So I didn't hear whether or not that, I assume there must be soil down in there, because the way you were describing it, it sounds like the home is built over a dirt crawl space. So those are things that you might consider doing. Unfortunately, you know, mice in particular, I mean, they can get through the tiniest crevice. And
size of a dime they can get through.
Yeah, I mean, they really don't require much of an invitation to make their way into a home. And so, you know, there are some ways you might try to control them, short of, you know, poison, certainly, but it's really difficult to you know, block every hole.
One of the things you can do around your house, just as a preventer, is to make sure that right around the house you've got your grasses cut short and there aren't spaces and places for the mice to hide. If it's relatively clean around the house, around the edges, borders of the house, you have much greater opportunity of keeping the mice away. So that's another thing you might want to consider, how you just sort of manage around your house, around the outside lawn area around the house. So that's something to consider, too. So all that, give it a try. And Ruth, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join us, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Richard in Oshkosh, we're on to you now. Hi, Richard. Thanks for calling.
Good afternoon, almost. I'm remodeling my bathroom, and when I bought the house, the bathroom was all blue. I don't know why they had everything blue. Blue walls, blue toilet, blue tubs around. I mean, blue everywhere, even blue linoleum. And I'm tearing up everything. But the only problem is the tubs around is all one piece. And I used to work in doing truck repair body work, and we used to paint fiberglass body panels. Can I do the same thing with the tubs around? Rough it up, then put a undercoat, and then another coat of regular paint and a sealer on it, and
will that work? Paint or something?
Fine.
Marine paint,
I
maybe?
I don't think it's been done, as far as I know. So that's, I guess that's my comment. There are certainly one-piece tubs that you can assemble or install over that existing tub. So you can refurbish the tub and the surround all in one piece. There's outfits, companies that will do that for you. But when it comes to painting, Chad, have you ever seen that completed?
Well, I do not know of a process that is reliable. I mean, there are some, if you had an old ceramic tub, and it sounds like this is fiberglass, but if you had an old ceramic or porcelain sort of fixture, then that can be reglazed. But even that is about a 5-year, warranty, and you will expect to see some chipping and wearing of the finish. So I'm not sure. I mean, with the fiberglass being flexible, I would be hesitant.
Yeah. I was thinking of marine paint, but I don't know if a marine type paint that is, you know, used to water and fiberglass. I mean, they paint. I'm just not sure. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that would come to my mind is a possibility, but never heard of it. Never heard of it being done. All right, Rich.
Okay, something to think about.
All right, something to think about. You might check on marine paints, but I don't know. Thomas and Rhinelander, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Thank you, and thank you for your fine service.
Sure.
Over the winter, the program This Old House actually built a new house using old materials. And in the process of building the house, they did large sections of the wall units. It was everything, the studs, the outer and inside finishing, windows, venting, electrical, and then they lifted them into place. My question is, do you know of any service in the state of Wisconsin that does those panel systems?
Well, Brunzell Lumber actually will build those paneled walls and you know, facilitate delivering them on site. And I have not done it myself for any of our clients, but some of my competitors in the Madison area have had projects built in that manner. And I'm a remodeling company, and these have been remodel jobs. In newer homes, it's a little bit easier to do a panelized construction, but you know, there's still a fair number of things that have to be done once the home is put together. But it is a, you know, and using salvaged materials, that's interesting, because a lot of the materials that go into a panelized home tends to be a newer kind of higher tech.
Mm-hmm. Materials that they used that were the older materials were more in the finished product, trying to get an old barn-style look.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Dan in Fond du Lac, we'll go to you now. Hi, Dan.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
My wife and I are considering building a home, and in order to maybe afford it, we might be looking at trying to be our own general contractors. Now, a friend of mine who's in the business said that the state just changed their regulations to make it more difficult or almost impossible to be your own general contractor. Do you know anything about this, and is it a wise idea for me to try to do this?
Yeah, I do not. I don't know about the new regulations, if they've made it harder or if it's impossible. So unfortunately, I'm not able to help you there. When it comes to general contracting, I guess the comment to ensure a fine end product, the Energy Star program has consultants that really work with you in the design stage. They have services from helping you with design consultation in addition to Energy Star certification that can work with you as a building performance consultant. And I think there are really a valuable resource to fall back to as you not only build the house, but you design it from the get-go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How would I get in contact with somebody from Energy Star?
I guess you can start with the Focus on Energy program's website, and that's focusonenergy.com, all one word. So residential programs, you'll find a tab for that, and you'll be able to search by county and zip code who are the consultants in your area. I think they're going to be a real valuable resource to give you some insights into the processes involved in building a home.
That's great advice. Thank you very much.
I would just add, Dan, that while I certainly think it's possible, if you have a lot of time to provide the oversight along with the use of that consultant, you could be your own general contractor. But there is a lot of value in having a builder that you would select and someone whom you trust that will make sure that all the pieces are put together properly in conjunction, I agree, with the Energy Star consultant. Because, you know, think of it, you know, someone that might be good under the hood of a car, for example, wouldn't necessarily want to build a car. And even if you're good at, say, fixing up and maintaining a home, it doesn't mean that putting it together from start to finish is something that someone might, you know, really want to be responsible for. So,
yeah. Thanks for calling, Dan. Good luck. Gordon in Wisconsin Rapids, we're going to you now. Hi, Gordon.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
This kind of ties in with the last call. I was at a seminar a couple nights ago, and there was a lady there from Milwaukee that was telling us that unless we're remodeling ourselves, anytime a contractor is going to disturb more than 6 square feet in a room, they have to do testing for asbestos and lead and all this stuff, and it was going to add $300-$400 to the cost just to do remodel like one room, and then it had to be inspected afterwards. Do either of your guests know anything about this?
Yes, there are some new regulations coming into to force right now, and this has been in process for about 5 years now, but the state is just starting to implement the new EPA rules with respect to lead. Asbestos has always been a regulated contaminant, and you know we're no one other than a homeowner is allowed to disturb asbestos. And it's general practice for us to have certain materials tested prior to having them removed from a home. And then, of course, if we find that the material does contain asbestos, we have it professionally abated. Lead is also a contaminant that we need to be very concerned about. Lead poisoning is very real, and young children are particularly vulnerable to lead poisoning, but it affects all of us. So that is accurate. You want to add to that,
John? No, I was just going to follow up, Chad. So the new rules are in place. 6-foot disturbance, I think that sounds correct from what I recall. We're need testing. Is it based on a certain age of house?
Well, yes and no. Lead has been, the old rules for lead is that we'd hand out a brochure to our clients, and this has been around for about 10 years, that just makes the homeowner aware if a professional is going to disturb a certain amount of surface, make them aware of the threat of lead contamination. But prior to the new regulations, there was no protocol required other than notification. Now, you know, there is some testing that's going to be required, and the contractors will all have to be certified. So we're in the process of figuring out, in fact, the state's in the process of finalizing the curriculum and the requirements and the testing. And then very shortly, contractors, like myself will be engaged in the training, for our field staff.
Excellent.
All right.
Yeah.
So there you have it. Thanks, Gordon.
All right. Thank you.
Mark in Eau Claire, we're on to you now. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Good morning. I think I have a possible solution for Jeff, who was looking at upgrading his three-season porch from screens to something that would be more weather-tight.
Sure.
And if he was looking at not heating the space or using the space all year, there is a company in Eau Claire called Archer Lion, which sells a window called a PGT Easy Breeze window. It is a four-track vinyl glazed window, which goes on like a storm window, and would allow him to use that space and put furniture and carpeting out there, because he could close it off without having the the weather affect his use of that space.
You guys, thanks, Mark. Chad, you know anything about that?
Well, there are other products out there. I'm not familiar with that particular product. We've installed a product called Glass Walls, which allows you to convert a full height opening in a screen porch to a large triple track storm window. Something, it sounds similar.
Yeah.
This would be similar to, we investigated the Monterey windows,
yep,
which are glass.
Yes.
This is a vinyl glazed window, so it is a lot lighter and appeared to be quite a bit less expensive. But it did do the trick of closing off the space and allowing us to open it up and get the breeze when we wanted it, but still be able to enjoy the space from the first part of April, middle of February, on through Thanksgiving, and even in December with just a little space heater. And then we didn't have to do anything with the floor and insulation, and it allowed us to close things up and keep the wind and the weather out.
Sounds good, Mark. You want to repeat that name for Jeff in case he's listening?
Yes, in case Jeff's listening, the company is called Archer Lion, and it's in Eau Claire, and there is the product is called the PGT Easy Breeze window.
All right. PGT Easy Breeze window. Okay. Mark, thank you. Thanks very much. And Chad, you wanted to add something?
Well, I wanted to follow up on the previous call, something excuse me, that John had asked about the year of a home. And I failed to mention that it is true that 1978 was the year when we stopped allowing lead to be in paint. And there is a common perception that if your house is built since 1978, that you don't have to be worried about lead or asbestos. But it turns out that thanks to the global economy that we all mm-hmm. inhabit, that there are a lot of products coming in and getting put into homes which, in fact, do have lead or asbestos contamination in them. Most recently, it's discovered that a lot of drywall that was coming in during the most recent building boom of the 90s and into this decade contained contaminants in them. And so, you know, really you really have to test almost
pretty much anything. Yeah. All right.
So
there you have it. And we'll take some more calls. Chad Spate of Chad's Carpentry, John Viner of GDS Associates, our guest here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking home renovation and repair with Chad Spate and John Viner, Larry Mueller here, and Kermit from Middleton emailed us. As an older home with traditional storm windows, many of the storms have wood rot at their bottoms. What are the trade-offs in terms of cost, practicality, energy efficiency of having the old storms repaired, replaced with new traditional storms, or replaced with triple-track storm windows, or perhaps replaced with new energy-efficient windows with built-in screens?
There are a lot of issues there. Certainly the nice old wood frames, you know, very nice to look at, certainly, and historically. Wood is a great product properly cared for, but a storm window sits on that sill of a window, and water will get behind the screen when it is a screen as opposed to the wood. And even a lot of times when the wood storm is up, some water will get inside, and it has to be able to get out. A common mistake that people make, no matter what their storm window is made out of, is they caulk the bottom edge of their storm panel. Mm-hmm. And so the water gets into the window sill in between the primary window sash and the storm, and it's trapped, and it rots through that wooden sill. So whether or not the wood frame is restored on the old window, or whether you go to an all-aluminum or all-metal storm or even vinyl, you still have to make sure that water is allowed to get out. And there are little weep holes that are designed into almost any storm system. So that will assure that in the future, wood rot's not a problem.
When it comes to performance of those windows, obviously a new Energy Star rated window is going to give you the most comfort. Economics is obviously another issue, but if we're going to replace those windows with new windows, we're doing it for other reasons than, in addition to saving energy, we're doing it because of we spend a lot of time by those windows and we want to be comfortable. Mm-hmm. If that's high on the list of priority, just changing the storm out isn't going to increase that level of comfort. It's going to be the need for a new window. And I haven't heard of anybody that hasn't replaced their windows that really is unhappy with the amount of comfort that they've achieved. Everybody really is very satisfied with installations of new windows. The cost and the payback becomes a different story sometimes, but sometimes we just have to look at the other benefits that are available.
Linda in Heartland, we'll go to you next. Hi, Linda.
Hi, good morning. I have a very old house. It's been completely redone. And in the kitchen, I have recessed fluorescent lights. My electrician has noticed they're so old that the parts, he's been trying to get them on the internet. And it has been impossible to do. Now, when they redid this house, they changed the voltage. So he said to redo these lights, we would have to break through the wall to put in the new wiring, etc. I'm wondering if there's anything I can put in those recessed areas, like battery lights or something, so that we don't have to go through all that work.
Change the voltage so we have maybe it was a low voltage system. How old is the house?
Low voltage.
It's a low voltage system, so obviously things would need to be upgraded. And there may be other reasons you'd want to upgrade the wiring as well if it's depending on its condition. 24 volt AC lighting, I think, certainly is out there and available. You can.
I've just had my kitchen redone, and I hate to have the wall would have to come up down to get that voltage through.
Get to change it out effectively.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. In fact, he's identified where the wires go, and the parts he would have to replace were in the basement. And he's looked online to see if he could replace them, etc., and he said it's just useless.
Yeah, and I guess I would have to, not having any specific brands or products in mind, that's going to be the trend, to feel comfortable that the wiring is all in good shape, because we're dealing with something that's a very critical component in our homes to have functioning. So I would certainly follow the recommendations of the electricians, because I'm not able to direct you anything for certain.
Yeah, but he hasn't come up with any suggestions. I'm wondering if there's a battery-operated light I could recess in there or anything like that.
No battery recessed lights that I've ever heard of that would accommodate that. So,
and there's nothing else that I can really do except have the whole system changed.
I would be interesting to go online and search the web a little bit for specialty lighting products for 24 volts AC and see what we can come up with. But certainly it's going to take some research.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately. There you have it, Linda. Thank you for calling. And Jeff in New Berlin, we're on to you. Jeff, hello.
Good day. I have a question. The topic was touched earlier, but I have a cottage. It's about 150 years old, and they didn't believe in foundations back then. And I'm wondering, to have the floors leveled out, is that something that would I contact a carpenter or general contractor? I mean, who would I do, and what all really is involved with that process?
Right. Chad, what do you think?
Well, this is a single-story cottage.
Actually, it's a two-story.
It's a two-story. Okay. Well, and it's just, I mean, what is it sitting on?
Well, there underneath there now, there's a couple of blocks. It's actually sitting, one of the corners is sitting on a tree stump that was cut down when the house was built, apparently.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not really, you know, there's been other people in the area that have dug out and put foundations down, but I mean, I don't know who I would start to contact.
Who would you work with? Okay.
Yeah, I think you're probably going to have to find a reputable contractor in the area that has some experience in doing that, and I mean, I know a couple in the Madison area that, you know, come in and they'll put steel beams underneath the home and jack the entire house up uniformly, and then be able to do that work, you know, with the house kind of floating above. It's a big deal. I mean, you're typically looking at investing, you know, anywhere from 10 to 15, maybe even $20,000 to have that sort of work done. But it's really imperative to have a proper foundation if you're going to look to do anything like that. Otherwise, the house is just kind of floating there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, anything you would do to try to support a given point under the structure would be suspect to heaving, sinking, all sorts of things, and may cause more problems. So. Yeah.
How far down would you need to put a footing for something like that? I mean, isn't our frost line like 5 feet in this?
It's 4 feet, pretty much, I think, throughout the state.
Okay.
So 48 inches. And it's an opportunity to put in a proper basement, you know, when you have this work done. And then generally you're going to go down a couple of feet more to have a full basement. Depending on the elevation that you want the house. I mean, of course, you have an opportunity to raise the home relative to the ground, so that if the house now is just a couple of steps above ground level, you might have it so that it's 5 or 6 or, you know, roughly 3 feet, say, above grade when you're done. And that's an opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
So,
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's see. We'll go to Richard in Whitefish Bay next. Hi, Richard.
Good day, and thank you, Larry,
sure,
and the boys for a wonderful show, as always. I have a home that's built in 1949, and I was not pleased with how the house is performing in wintertime. So my wife and I want to get on with doing some energy audit and some re-insulation, some window work. We're in Milwaukee. I have a couple of questions relating to this one. Where in Milwaukee could we find a reputable energy auditor? How do you go about finding one that you know that isn't going to be a rip-off or do it at the wrong time of the year or something like that?
Mm-hmm. So I often fall back to the state's Focus on Energy program. So obviously that's the Focus on Energy program's been around about 9 years, and they have some pretty extensive training and qualifications requirements for their consultants that become accredited through the program. So if you have access to the internet,
right,
that's focusonenergy.com.
Okay.
And up on top, you'll find a residential tab and hit for residential homes. And they'll quickly see an option to find a consultant. So you'll find a list and be able to search by county.
Yeah. Now, the home is brick.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't know if we'll go through the audit or just go ahead and do it ourselves without the audit. How do you insulate a brick home? And then how do you put new windows in? I mean, is that all possible to do, or is that not possible if you have a brick home?
It depends, is the answer. Often we can, obviously windows can be retrofitted and replaced.
Mm-hmm.
Wall insulation is a different story. Not always can we effectively insulate the walls of a brick home. Though there are some newer products on the market that... one term that's used is called injection foam, where they are drilling a 3/4 inch hole between the bricks through the mortar and inserting a foam product into that wall cavity. So they're able to spray an expanding foam carefully into this wall cavity and fill that cavity.
You see that on the outside of the building. I mean, it kind of damages the aesthetics, doesn't it, a little bit?
They're able to really match up that mortar because that's where they're drilling through in the bricks and patch. It's a 3/4 inch hole every 16 inches or so. So they do a pretty good job at fine-tuning that. Now, the product hasn't been on the market for 10 or 15 years, but it's something that has been developed and is available in the last couple of years. So you may be able to search injection foam as one option, and you'll find a website with it and be able to find a dealer in your area to talk to.
Okay.
That's one option for the walls.
You know, would the consultant, if a consultant came in, might be able to give them a little recommendation on that or not?
Absolutely. That's where his advice becomes pretty valuable, and certainly I would steer anybody that's looking to make really any type of major renovation, or big or small, to consult with the Energy Star or Home Performance with Energy Star consultant in helping you guide and make those priorities.
They would give you that same kind of advice as to which is the best kind of window, because I was looking at, well, there's wood with vinyl clad, there's solid vinyl, there's something called Fiberex, you know.
Yep. And they'd help you steer. Not only are there cash back rewards from Focus on Energy for making these improvements, but federal tax credits that can be added to the mix. And the federal tax credits, that Home Performance with Energy Star consultant is going to help you meet the requirements of those for those new windows to meet the tax credit requirements.
Okay, good. Just one quick more thing. If you have, I think this central air in here is probably from the middle 80s. Do you think that would qualify for replacement? Is that a good idea? You know.
So the air conditioning, certainly there's energy savings to be had if it's a good 20 years old. We're going to have some energy savings. We're going to have more energy savings if you utilize the house in the summertime by buttoning up the windows, and we're going to use that air conditioning for 2 to 3 months out of the year because that's the way we operate our house. If we're operating our house with, we have the windows open for the most part, except for a week or two in the summertime, where it gets a little humid and hot than we'd like. And then maybe we can move along with our existing unit and not have it be too big of an issue.
But maybe the furnace is the better target first. Because if they were both from mid-80s, that's probably the best target then.
Certainly. Mid-80s, they still were building, or they had, were building pretty energy-efficient furnaces at that time. And you may have a 90% efficient furnace from the mid-80s. And then again, the savings difference by going to another, say, 94 or 96% efficient furnace, we would replace it based on just age and reliability rather than energy savings, depending on what you're starting with.
Good luck. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry of Madison, John Viner of GDS Associates in Madison, our guests here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking home renovation and repair issues today with Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, and John Viner of GDS Associates of Madison. Really pleased to have them with us today. Websites, go to chadscarpentry.com for Chad's, of course, and to gdsassociates.com as well for more information on their outfits. And lots of callers online, so we will go right back to the phones and to Jennifer in West Bend next. Jennifer, hi. Thanks for calling.
Thanks. I actually have a question about our new home that we recently purchased. It's on enough acreage that we actually have the option of doing geothermal heating and cooling.
Okay.
But we're having a hard time deciding. Our furnace is original to 1984, and we're being told that basically it needs enough work that it's time to replace it. And we're having a hard time just trying to compare the benefits and costs to geothermal versus traditional high-efficiency heater on LP.
Okay. I think for a newer home or existing building where you have the ground loops already installed, you've had the geothermal operating, right? That's correct?
No, we would have to install everything. Right. Okay. Now it just has a traditional heater on LP gas.
Okay. Okay. I think that the geothermal heat pump is a great option, and I think if you can swing the increased cost, that ultimately that's in the long haul a really great way to go. It is the most energy efficient heating source that's available. I think the paybacks for the difference in cost between, I guess at this point, for a new LP gas furnace, having an existing unit replacement is probably a few thousand dollars to replace that propane furnace.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as there's nothing that needs to be changed with the ductwork, which I assume there mm-hmm. wouldn't be being a new unit. Geothermal, of course, we're getting up there into sometimes the $15,000 to $20,000 range for a geothermal heat pump. So there's a pretty big price difference there. I think if you can swing the increased cost and you're going to stay in your home a long time, that's where I think the benefits for geothermal are good and where I'd advocate for it.
Yeah, we've actually gotten some bids, and those numbers are about right. We actually do have to get some venting work done. I guess they said a lot of homes have undersized vents. But it's hard to compare apples and apples and what the different contractors are saying. Do you have any recommendations for kind of how somebody who doesn't really understand a lot about heating and air conditioning can really make sure that they're getting a right contractor?
Yeah, the right contractor and even the right size of equipment. The network of building performance consultants, certainly, again, I keep coming back to this, but very valuable, a very valuable resource, and you can find that on focusonenergy.com. They can actually do some computer modeling for energy savings. They can come out to your house, may spend 3 to 4 hours at the home if we're going to do what they call a rating, where they're going to rate that house in its energy efficiency on a scale of 0 to 100. But more of the benefit there is to give you calculations of energy loads, energy use within the home, and help you size the equipment And also, once they've modeled your house, they can change, what if I put this furnace in? What if I put a geothermal heat pump in? And they can actually provide a pretty good side-by-side comparison of dollar use and savings.
Well, great. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Catherine emailed us, says, I'm trying to put up some paneling in the basement, concrete walls, and want to know if I should put some kind of insulation between wall and panel, and maybe what kind and how to attach it. That's one question. She also has another one, but let's take that one first.
You know, you definitely want to put up insulation on the walls, and John has a horrified look on his face. But the type of insulation that you use is critically important. Perhaps the simplest way to go would be to use a closed cell, blue board foam product. Typically, you can buy that 1 inch thick, 1.5 inch, 2 inches. And the great thing about using that product, if it's a do-it-yourselfer, is that, it's not, if you do get a little bit of water it's going to withstand that. You know, mm-hmm. It's a product that is rated for ground contact. So if you can afford to frame out the wall and apply a two-part urethane foam, that's a better way to go. But I will say that if there are water problems, if it is not a dry basement or if water is leaking in, that needs to be addressed first, because you don't want to be closing up a wall that is constantly getting wet with running water. So if there, so that is a very important issue. And there are things that can be done to address that with interior drain tiles and some other things.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. That's just make sure that basement stays dry and put a rigid foam board or a spray foam apply to the wall without any plastic vapor barrier. And then we can stud that wall out and feel comfortable with that paneling.
Is gravel with sand a good blocking agent to keep water from seeping into basements by windows? This caller had some water inside after the big heavy rains.
Gravel is certainly a good material to prevent capillary action of that water wicking up from the ground and heading towards that foundation and increasing water entry into the home, and also facilitates drainage away and prevents that capillary and wicking action up. I would probably limit the amount of sand we would add there. Sand is something that really allows moisture and water to travel in all directions through that sand, through capillary action.
We'll turn to Mike and Delavan next. Hi, Mike.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, me and my wife bought a 1890 Victorian duplex, and we're turning it into one home. And, of course, it's not insulated. It has the original plaster on the walls and the original clapperboards outside. Of course, I'd like to probably insulate it somehow, but do I have to worry about a vapor barrier between the outside and the insulation?
No. I mean, though, of course, again, the way you insulate it is really critical. And, I mean, there's some things you could do that would be of limited effectiveness and other things which are going to provide a substantial increase in comfort and reduce your energy bills. And probably the best thing that you could consider doing if you're not planning to disturb a lot of the walls is to have dense pack cellulose, or possibly looking at some of these newer foam products that can be applied. But the dense pack cellulose is a tried and true way to insulate those old hollow cavities. However, there's one really important detail. A house of that age is likely to have knob and tube wiring in it.
Correct.
And if that wiring has not been abandoned and new wiring installed so that the electrical system is updated, you cannot insulate around that old wiring, because the knob and tube wiring was designed, it gives off heat, and it is designed to be able to freely give off that heat. And if it is encapsulated in the insulation, then it's going to get too hot and you're going to have combustion, and that's how homes burn down. So yeah. That's one important detail. And that's going to be probably your largest expense is updating the electrical system.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And Ken in Eagle River, your turn now. Hi, Ken.
Hello there. My question is in regards to the federal tax credit for upgrading windows and doors, and I want to know if that applies to a second home, like for a cabin, for instance, as opposed to your primary residence.
Ooh, that's a good question.
I guess the fact that I hesitate, I'm not going to be able to give a for sure answer on that. I'm thinking that it probably would. If it's a residence that you own, regardless if it's your first, second, or third, my hunch is that it would apply, though I don't have that technical literature in front of me, and often we have to defer back to the tax accountant to read fine print, because a lot of that is, when it comes to taxes, is not easy to read, and you got to read the fine print there, because it's not spelled out up front.
Yeah, I mean, the relevant question is because educate the viewers out there, I mean, this economic stimulus package includes up to a $1,500 tax credit for work that includes insulation, air sealing, window replacement, and there are certain restrictions on all of that, but essentially it's 30% of the material cost up to $1,500 in a tax credit. So essentially, you can spend up to $5,000 on materials, and if it could be windows with a 0.3 or lower U value, though actually up until May 31st, you can install U35 or lower windows and still qualify for that credit because that's the old Energy Star standard. But the interesting question is, does the $1,500 cap apply to the taxpayer or to each residence?
Oh,
that's,
yeah.
You know,
good one.
I think that's going to be, once we have our accountants look into that, we'll know the answer to your question.
That's interesting. Yeah, that is very interesting. Thanks, Ken. I'm sorry we don't have the whole answer. Maybe we've got a tax guy listening or a tax person listening and call and let us know. Maybe the tax people don't even know yet. Eugene and Viola, on to you now. Hi, Eugene.
Good afternoon, Larry. This is another 1890s Victorian story. I'm looking at upgrading the wiring and putting in insulation. I've still got the original push-button switches. And what I'm wondering is, can I run a third wire off those old push-button switches and ground them and keep those switches, or do I have to put in new ones?
Well, you know, the problem with the old switch is it's not UL listed, and so there's certain things about the components that we don't know whether or not it is truly compatible or safe. I mean, I imagine that I would not encourage it, but that's a separate question from whether or not it can be done. There are some switches out there that look like that old two-button switch that are UL tested, that are grounded, or that are at least compatible with a modern wiring system that you could purchase. But the bad news is that, of course, an old restoration fixture like that or switch is pretty expensive. But they exist, and I would not feel comfortable encouraging you to retrofit that old switch.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Talking about lighting or electricity again, someone, a lady earlier, wondered about a 24-volt recessed lighting, and someone emailed us to say that Seagull Lighting makes a 24-volt recessed can in both new and remodeled models.
Excellent. So. Yes, Seagull. I've heard of that outfit before, so that's a great lead for us.
Seagull Lighting. Okay, let's go to Bernie in Green Bay. Hi, Bernie.
Hi. I'm just calling in response to an earlier caller who wanted to paint his shower, fiberglass shower stall.
Right.
I had the same situation. I had the robin's nest blue, robin's eggs blue.
Yeah.
And I bought a product at Home Depot, and it was specifically for painting shower and bath fixtures, and it worked very well. I sanded down the fiberglass stall. You do have to have very good ventilation.
Yeah, I would think, yeah.
But it worked excellent, and I did it about 5.5 years ago, and it's holding up excellent. I have no chips.
Wow. Do you remember the name of the product?
No, I'm sorry, I don't. It was a two-part epoxy, and it was available in two different colors. I did go from a blue to a white, and it's holding up excellent. I did the shower stall and also the tile above it, and it's held up equally well on both products, the tile and the fiberglass.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah,
but it is available. I've seen it at Lowe's, but I bought it from Home Depot.
Thank you, Bernie. Appreciate
Welcome.
That. Appreciate that very much. Well, yeah, you definitely would want a highly ventilated place when you were working on that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Volatile organic compounds and toxins are high in those things, probably a lot of toluene and other nasty chemicals.
Aaron in Hartford, we're on to you. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a fiberglass tub, and it's got a crack in the bottom of it. It kind of feels like there's no subfloor underneath it.
No.
And I don't want to replace the whole tub because it'll turn into remodeling the whole bathroom. I was wondering if there's any kind of like patch kit or pliable patch kit or something that I could put on there.
Well, it is possible to patch a fiberglass tub or wall, depending on how it is made, though. What is the access underneath that bathroom? I mean, is there a basement below there, or is this second floor?
It's actually a duplex, and it's like my bedroom's underneath there.
Okay. The reason I ask, you know, it's good practice generally when those units are installed to set them into a bed of wet cement so that stiffens the floor of these units, because the problem that, well, you have here is that, you know, things like this are going to happen if that is not done. And you might want to consider doing something that will stiffen it from below, though not, I mean, you may have some difficulty there gaining access, but.
Yeah.
Could I, like, open up the crack and stick some great stuff under there, maybe, or?
I don't know. I wouldn't want to say yes, because you don't know how it's going to react with the. May melt your tub.
Right. But there is a patch, though, that you can just get at Home Depot.
Well, it's going to depend. I mean, there are some kits out there where you can, with an acrylic fiberglass unit, there is some patching that can be done. You know, if it's just like a vinyl unit, you're kind of out of luck. So, but if it is kind of a fiberglass unit, there are patch kits for that. Though it's not something we've ever done. We've always had, like, the manufacturer's rep come and tend to it. So I'm not quite sure how easy it is. So good luck with that.
Good luck. Thanks very much for calling. And Philip in Stevens Point, hello to you.
Hello. I have a question about insulating and the vapor barrier for a dirt crawl space.
Okay.
You know, I need to find out. I want to find out do I need to seal? Does the plastic, when you put the plastic down on the dirt, does it need to be sealed completely around the edges?
Yeah, that's the idea. We want to, our best practices would indicate, yep, we want that plastic sealed on all edges, all seams. A common approach in that crawl space is, in conjunction with insulating, we lay that plastic down first, and then we maybe drape that plastic up on the foundation walls a foot or so. And then one common way that really adheres that plastic nicely is spray foam, expanding, insulating foam that is going to insulate the foundation wall and also seal those edges to the concrete. Otherwise, we're left with maybe a wood lath and concrete anchors. We're attaching, pinning that plastic to the concrete through a wood lath and a mechanical fastener. In that scenario, it's nice to have room to work down there and be able to spend some time without getting all cramped up.
Okay. What about the insulation on the floor? What do you use the faced or unfaced? What kind of insulation do you use?
On the floor, is that crawl space vented? Do you have lots of vents around the perimeter of that area?
No.
So it's unvented. And is that crawl space open to a full basement?
It's open to a 10 by 10 furnace room.
Yes. Stays pretty heated because we got those mechanicals down there? A common approach is to continue with this foundation insulation, as I suggested, and not install the insulation on the floor as an option. If we feel we can keep the crawl space in that full basement within some reason, say less than 10 degrees temperature difference between the house and the basement, that's maybe a typical basement temperature. If it's 70 degrees upstairs and we got 62, 65 even down in the basement, it's a little bit cooler, we can keep it in that range, then we are going to keep that floor warm without insulating it. Though if it's a leaky stone foundation and we've got breezes going through there and that basement's going to get 55 degrees, 50 degrees in the dead of winter, then in addition to using the spray foam to help us secure the plastic, help us plug the holes on the foundation, then I think that we may just simply use a fiberglass insulation in that floor to help keep that floor temperature warm.
Mm-hmm. There you have it. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. We heard from Terry Pease, who's the Quality Assurance Coordinator with the Wisconsin Division of Energy Services, who was listening today as well. He was just talking about writing a fairly long email here. We can't go through it all, but air sealing first, insulation second. If you're doing a priority on things, air sealing first, insulation second, high efficiency appliances probably third on the list when you're talking about efficiency and getting the most bang for your buck.
Absolutely.
Guys, thanks so much. You'll come back and be with us again, I assume, I hope.
Absolutely.
You bet.
Always a joy.
Appreciate it. Chad Spate, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison. Go to his website at chadscarpentry.com. John Viner of GDS Associates of Madison, and their website is gdsassociates.com. Pleased to have them with us today. And just a reminder, tomorrow I'll be in Bayfield for Bayfield in Bloom. We'll be kicking that off at the Bayfield Pavilion. If you're in the area, we'd love to see you there starting at 11, but I'll be there probably by 10 o'clock in the morning or so. And in fact, I'm leaving this afternoon. It's a nice afternoon to drive. It's my birthday today, too, so I got a birthday drive to northern Wisconsin, probably listen to public radio the whole way up. Thanks again for listening. Again, Bayfield and Bloom tomorrow for our edition of Garden Talk. And stay listening. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.